I guess here is my plea, is what I would like for people to do is to stop the nonsense that there are no other forms of intelligence out there and recognize that plants are intelligent, that rocks are intelligent, that bears are intelligent, that slugs are intelligent. Everybody is intelligent, and their intelligences are unimaginably different than ours. So a lot of people who know me know that I live in bear territory and see bears almost every day through most of the year. They usually show up in May, April maybe, and then I'll see them usually till December. And it's been a gift and a joy to see bear interactions over all these years, and to see their social relations, even though they're fairly solitary creatures for the most part. My mom especially had a really good relationship with bears, and they would bring their babies to her house to show them to her when they were the size of cats. And anyway, every year we would see mother and baby, and this year saw mother and baby just like normal. And then about a week ago, the mother was still showing up, but without her baby. And I've seen mothers show up without their babies before, very, very, very rarely. And when they do, they are normally always sniffing the air, and they are here for just a few minutes, and then they run away. And the reason is because the baby is up a tree, and they are attending. They're smelling, is anybody else out there? Is there, they're very nervous, very skittish, but she wasn't skittish. And so I suspected that the baby was gone. And then, she showed up the next day, the baby was not there. She showed up the next day, the baby was not there. And I'm presuming by then that the baby's dead. And I was reading about a study in Sweden that, in Sweden at least, when there's about a 30% chance that the babies will die within the first year and during breeding season, and about a 90% chance, if they die, a 90% chance that they were killed by a male bear. And I didn't know if this baby had been fallen out of a tree or been hit by a car. And then come here. And then the answer really came that yesterday I looked out this window, and I thought I saw the mother bear sleeping on the ground. And it's I can't tell you how happy it makes me to be able to just say that sentence, that, I routinely see bears sleeping on the ground. And it's also really fun to be able to be walking through the forest and not paying any attention to where I'm going and to step in bear shit and to get upset and then go, wow, that's kind of cool. I actually just stepped in bear poop. And they're a routine part of my life. Anyway, so I looked out and I thought that the baby, I'll back up a little bit. Also, there were the last couple weeks I have seen two yearlings. And what happens a lot of times is that at about a year old, a male will come through and he will chase the yearling away from the mother. And he does that because once the mother stops nursing, about a week later, she'll come into estrus. And so these two yearlings I saw, they were very skittish, very scared, and they were undergoing the worst week of their life because they've been with their mom up until now. They got chased away by a big male, and now they're on their own. And it's the first day of the rest of their lives, or yesterday was the last day of their life as they knew it. And it's a scary world out there. And for a lot of creatures, once you leave your mother, that is the most dangerous time of your life. It's, you're on your own. We can see if the lessons your mother taught you are good enough. And everybody bigger than you is scary. So anyway, the yearlings were out there. And I saw the mother sleeping on the ground, and then I thought a yearling was sleeping up in the trees that are right there, because there were two bears there. And I looked more closely, and I thought that was weird for the yearling to be sleeping that close to the mother. And I looked more closely, and instead the mother was the one sleeping in the tree, and the one down at the base of the tree sleeping was a male. And then I understood for sure that, yeah, this is the male who killed the baby bear, and he was gone for about a week, and that's how long it takes for her to start being an estrus. And now what's going to happen, I've seen this many times, is he will follow her everywhere she goes. And basically, she will walk just on her own, and he will hang about 10 steps behind her, 15 steps behind her, not hassling her, just walking 10 steps behind her until it's time, and then they have sex, and then he leaves. And I don't know, maybe they hang out for a few days. I don't know how many times they have sex. But the point is that, you know, if we describe human behavior as, you know, some guy killing a child and then walking 10 feet behind the woman for the next 2 weeks until she consents to sex with him, that would be really horrific behavior and unthinkable. Unfortunately, not unthinkable, because in patriarchy, males do a lot of horrible things. Okay, I'm going to stop here and go a different direction. That soon after the baby died, a friend of mine took a picture of the mother, and I shared it around, and you could tell that she's sad. Her eyes are just very, very sad in these pictures. And somebody told me not to anthropomorphize. And what he wanted to do is to make sure that we all understand that humans are the only ones with emotions, and that a mother bear doesn't grieve, and that non-humans don't grieve. And I responded to him by saying, yeah, we shouldn't anthropomorphize, which is why we should not project a machine's lack of emotions onto non-humans. That's what we constantly do is to, it's funny, the same people who tell us not to anthropomorphize and to never presume that non-humans have emotions will project onto the natural world machine language like ecosystem, or instead of natural community. And they will project onto it that non-humans are just beast machines, like Descartes said. So that's really anthropomorphic, because you're projecting onto the natural world the characteristics of a human creation, which is a machine. That is the ultimate in anthropomorphization. So it was very clear, you know, what am I going to believe? The human supremacism into which I've been indoctrinated, or my own eyes? And I believe my eyes, which are that she's sad. Having said that, I then run into problems, because I keep wanting to anthropomorphize here. I keep wanting to project my human morality onto the bears. But the bear was doing what bears do. And, well, maybe, because I was talking with a good friend of mine who's a wildlife biologist, who was asking, so do you think it's possible that this behavior in bears is a response to stressors in the environment? Because we know, you know, Peggy Reeve Sande talked about the characteristics of a high rape culture. And, you know, many of them are ones we'd expect, where males are valued and females aren't. Child rearing is not valued, et cetera, et cetera. And one of them was a history of ecological dislocation in the last several hundred years is a marker of a high rape culture. And we know that we've all heard, or many of us have heard about the river troop of baboons and the forest troop of baboons, which there was these troops of baboons that were studied for a long time. And one of the groups was extremely hierarchical and frankly pretty nasty. And then somehow, and the males would always steal all the prime food. And they got into rotten meat at the dump, and all the alpha males died, and the females took over the troop. And ever since then, that troop has had a radically different culture. The new children who were raised in a non-traumatic environment, and the behavior has been different. So, do bears have this infanticide because of trauma, because of additional stress? I don't know. I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no. I'm saying I don't know, and I'm saying let's keep an open mind as to, okay, what we know is that bears are bears. They aren't humans. So they have different social standards than humans do in the first place. They have different means of teaching each other. That one of the ways a mother teaches a baby what is appropriate to eat is by taking a bite of something edible and then blowing her breath in the baby's mouth. And that's a way of teaching this food is okay. I take a bite of apple, I blow in the mouth, now you know the scent of apple is a scent you can eat. Humans don't do that. You know, so we have different means of teaching. We have different means of thinking. And we also know that trauma changes behavior. There was that guy, Harry Harlow, I believe his name was. Harlow is his last name. I don't remember his first name. No, I don't remember his name. This guy who did these experiments on monkeys where he would create psychopaths by putting them in isolation booths or attaching them to felt mothers, removing them from their parents, attaching them to felt mothers that would at times shoot spikes out of them. So they think the baby clings to this felt mother because it has no real mother, and then at times it would shoot spikes at it. And he created psychopaths, and he himself obviously was a psychopath. The point is that non-humans can be turned into psychopaths. Non-humans can have their behavior changed. And then another point is that this particular male bear is really, really skinny. And he's skinny enough that his head looks oversized. And so is he under even more stress? Is that why his behavior was that? Or is this just a norm among bears? I don't know. And we will never know because right now we don't have any interactions with non-humans where the non-humans are not refugees in their own land. We don't know what it's like to live with a non-stressed, non-human community. I remember reading years ago about how some Indian tribe in the plains would routinely go get wolf pups out of the dens, and they would paint their faces, and they would play. The human children and the wolf children would play together, and then they would put them back in the den, and the wolf parents didn't care. And that's pretty close to unimaginable. So I think that's all really interesting stuff, but it's not what I wanted to get at. What I wanted to get at with this is that this world is far more complex than we think. And it's not merely complex like a complex machine, but instead, I can't imagine what it is like to be you, whomever you is who's watching this. I don't know how you think. I don't know what you feel. It is probably different than what I feel. You as a human, your experience is unimaginable to me. And now expand this outward so that your vision is extremely weak and your sense of smell is 100 times stronger than that of dogs. And you also walk on four legs and you eat whatever it is that bears eat. You eat a lot of grass, you eat a lot of fish, you eat a lot of insects. And I can't even imagine how they perceive the world with the smell being so strong and vision being weak, much less what their mores are, much less their experience of the world. How long does the bear grieve for the loss of her child? I don't know. And then to think, to add that, to take it further out to creatures who are farther and farther away from us, or further and further away from us, what is it like to be a sea star? What is it like to be a grasshopper with, if you flip away from the human supremacist and mechanistic perspective that everybody but humans is a machine, this opens up an entire world of what is their consciousness? And I would love to do a series on this, that what is the relationship to death? The relationship to death has to be different for a creature like an elephant who has fewer babies, who live longer, than it does for a frog who lays hundreds and hundreds of eggs with the expectation that 99% of them will never reach adulthood, that most of them, their role in the world is food. And what is it like? What is their relationship to death? What is their relationship to life? What is their relationship to relationships? When I remember reading this book back 10, 15 years ago. It was written in the 70s. And the conceit of the book was that a bear, a writer writes his final manuscript and then he can't get it published and he goes out in the forest and I don't know if he kills himself or if he loses the manuscript. And then the conceit of the book is a bear finds the manuscript and then the bear, at that point is anthropomorphic. The bear comes back, to the world and everybody treats him like a human and he's got this manuscript and then the bear becomes a famous writer and goes on tour. The bear came over the mountain, I think, or something like that. Anyway, there's a point at which the bear encounters a groupie and, they have sex and then the woman wants to have sex again later in the night and the bear looks at her and says, again? I already had sex this year. And so, you know, I guess here is my plea, is what I would like for people to do is to stop the nonsense that there are no other forms of intelligence out there and recognize that plants are intelligent, that rocks are intelligent, that bears are intelligent, that slugs are intelligent. Everybody is intelligent and their intelligences are unimaginably different than ours. And they have their own experiences that aren't human experiences, that are... I think about taste, and I think about how taste evolves. And I'm sure a lot of us have heard that a lot of times when sharks will bite humans, it's a mistake because they've mistaken them for a seal. And they take a bite, and it's like, oh God, this doesn't taste very good. And most predators have not evolved to have a taste for humans because we're not a primary prey species. So I would think that mountain lions would generally, because they generally eat deer, they would think, deer, gosh, this tastes pretty good. And humans are like, yeah, yeah. Well, or like the sharks, you know, the sharks go for a seal. Wow, that's a mighty tasty seal. And then it takes a bite of a human. It's like, God, what was that? And you know, flies are attracted to poop and are attracted to, or foxes. Foxes, I've seen this and I've read about it both, where foxes oftentimes, if they come across a dead animal, they will wait a few days until it is ripe, until it's bloating and sometimes covered in maggots. And that's when they really like it. I don't know why I'm not a fox. But the point is, they have preferences. Everybody has preferences. Everybody has thoughts. Everybody has emotions. Everybody has their own set of morals. And they're unimaginably different than ours. And my plea is to spend some time outside and just, when you think about, or when you experience, or when you pass by a tree or a mouse or a hawk or anyone, just try to think for a while, what is it like to be you? And I've said this before, that that is the fundamental question of any relationship. What is it like to be you? And, you know, here's another plea. Ask that of the people you know. Ask that of the humans you know. Ask that of your lover, of your friend, of your parent, of your child. What is it like to be you? And then expand that and keep expanding that question outward. And I don't think, if you really ask that question, if you really wait for answers, I don't think your life can ever be the same.